This is Ranger Kidwell Ross, editor at World Sweeper. I have the privilege of speaking today with John Dubioso. And John is many things. First off, John, welcome, and thank you.
Thank you, Ranger, for the introduction and the call. It's very good to talk to you.
Well, John, you were the Award of Excellence in Power Sweeping winner this year, which has become the preeminent award in the power sweeping industry. And just to give people an idea of the stature you have in this industry, you're the president of 3D Industrial Maintenance. You are the president of 3D Commercial Services, Tri-State Environmental, Tri-State Equipment Leasing, Tri-State Equipment Rebuilding, Tri-State Industrial Maintenance. And in those, you are very involved in the sweeping industry in a variety of ways, including power sweeping, but also one of the major repair facilities for AC Mobile and other sweepers. I know that you are also involved in a principal in Northeast Industrial and Kevin Sweeping, which are unionized sweeping companies. And if though that weren't enough, you've founded the Creative Rubber Organization, which is a leading environmental avant-garde company that sells rubber mulch and berms and those kinds of things. So more than that, you've been in this business since 1975 when you started your business in a garage in New York, and you have capitalized on that to build companies that have combined revenues in excess of $10 million a year. So this is somebody, folks out there listening, that you really can listen to and learn from. And I hope, John, that you would talk about what the early days of parking lot sweeping, power sweeping, were like in the 70s. Those are certainly early days from our perspective here in 2012. And then, you know, talk about what it has been like to build your companies and into where you are today. So I'll just leave the ball in your court, and if you could just take that away in the way that you think is best, that would be great.
Wow, that's a big ball to roll. I guess we could start off way back, if I can remember, 1975. Graduate of high school only, in some vocational school. Worked for Ford Motor Company in their service department. Ended up being service director of one of their large dealerships in Westchester County. And between that and working in the maintenance business, we decided to go out on our own and get involved in maintenance of corporate parks. And when we started with maintenance of corporate parks, it was snow removal and just general cleaning. And an old-timer in one of the parks said, listen, why don't you buy a sweeper? Because we hire this guy out of Jersey all the time to come here, and it would be very convenient if you had one, and we'd use it more often during the year. So we took that initiative and went to one of the local towns that was auctioning off an old Elgin Street King, or White Wing, they call it. It was a bottom-dump three-wheel Elgin, and we purchased that machine. And that was really the start of my business and getting into the sweeping business. But it was an experience to learn how to work on it, repair it, and try and learn how to drive it. I had a couple of people have to teach me, but we grasped. I'll give you a little funny story in learning about the mechanics of it. After we bought the machine, we couldn't afford to rebuild the hydraulic pump. And the old-timer says, you've got a spool valve here. And every so often, as your hydraulic pressures drop or you don't get your volume anymore, just put a dime underneath the spring, and it'll take you another month before it weakens again. Well, you got about 70 cents in dimes that you can use, so you got about 7 months of work that you can do before you have to rebuild this pump. Well, you know, the guy was right on the dime. It was seven times I put a dime in, and I was able to drag it out for 7 months to earn enough money to rebuild the hydraulic
pump. That's a great story.
So that's a kind of funny story that, you know, I'm a gearhead. I'm involved in the, you know, old-time mechanics, okay? You know, that was just a small story in the sweeping business. At that time, we worked out of our backyard. I rebuilt the pump on my dining room table, and we got it done, and we're in the sweeping business now. But, you know, the machine only went 12 miles an hour, so if we wanted to spread out in territory, we had to go out and do something else. So we looked around, and that's when we started buying the mobile sweeper four-wheel sweeper, I was in my heaven. Went 50 miles an hour, I could travel from town to town and county to county and really started going. And we really took off, I guess, in the mid-80s. We started really getting involved with the towns and talking to the towns and starting to join the associations. And they weren't into privatizing, but I would say the mid-80s to the end of the 80s, there was an era there where I convinced them that it was cheaper to hire out than do it yourself. And that's when the high dump mobile came into effect around 85. We were pretty much involved in doing some R&D with him. My best friend Joe DeSantis in Connecticut, which I ended up buying his company in the early 90s. Joe was a gearhead also. We worked very closely with AT Mobile in with Stan Brown and the boys down there in engineering in developing the high dump mobile. And Stan was the creator of that all by himself. But we were like their R&D people out on the road. So basically, in the sweeping business, that's where the sweeping business lied. The mid-80s really took off with the high dump. It became a very good production machine where you didn't have to go back to the highway garage to dump. You had a dump truck with you, you just dumped and you kept working.
Quite the innovation.
Well, that gives you production. And you know, in the 70s and 80s and the early 90s, the word production wasn't out there. You know, it was the good old boys. The highway departments were the good old boys. That's where in most of your rural areas, the old-timers went to do their job and help the community. It's not like today with the unions and the accountability, and it's just a whole different world between the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, and now we're in 2012, and all they're doing is fighting about pensions and unions and benefits, and you know, it's just a crazy world out there today. We're into the electronic age compared to basics back in the 70s and 80s. Completely different situation. Pressure was different. The stress was different. You got the job done, and you know, if you couldn't fix it today, you stayed a little later, you fixed it, you got it done tomorrow, and you just went on. But in getting back to the mobiles and stuff like that, we always wanted something better. We always wanted something better. And a lot of the manufacturers started to listen to us because we were the ones out there really looking for the production. In the late 90s, somewhere around 96, 97, people were going into retirement, but then all of a sudden they felt like coming back to the table. We had a couple of engineers come back to the table and said, well, let's build a machine. And that's when we created the Broom Bear.
So what did you see in the market that made you realize there was a niche for the Broom Bear? Were you just unhappy with what was available out there? I mean, that's quite a step to take as a contractor.
A little bit about being unhappy and a little bit about getting into new technology. It was the hydraulic system, single-engine machine, because most of your machines were dual-engine machines that ran over the road, you know, the mobiles and some of the Elgins, and everybody had dual-engine machines. We wanted to go to a single-engine machine. And we did it. We did it by on a commercial chassis, having a PTO-mounted pump with a central load sense and hydraulic block that would control all your hydraulic systems and control your flow. And that was really the state-of-the-art machine in 96 when we came out with that. 96, 97 was the years that we made that. We brought it to the show. We showed a few people, and I guess by law, within 18 months we sold the company because we became a major competitor to the sweeping industry.
Well, and to the largest sweeper company in America. So
right.
That says something about your design right there.
So, I mean, they liked it, and we had a deal with one sweeper manufacturer, and the deal didn't go through, and we ended up making a deal with Elgin Federal Signal, and now it's one of your leading machines in the country. I mean, they're making changes to it now in 2011 and 12, but they've had a good 10, 12 years of our design and sold a lot of machines as a leading machine in the country.
Well, you talk about yourself being a gearhead, and in the sweeping industry, I'm not sure there's a better term term to have for somebody who can see some success, because you need to work on these machines, you know, all the time, and it really says something that you knew sweeping and sweepers well enough to realize what you could make and then make something that was that successful.
Well, I mean, going back in the 80s and 90s, you know, you didn't have a parts department around the corner, and things were expensive, and when something broke, you need to make it work. So as a gearhead, you either welded it, created something, or do something till you get the right part in. So, and we always looked at anything that, I always looked at anything that anybody sold me and see if I can make it better and easier and more efficient. You know, people just sell products sometimes to sell products, but you need to sell products for several reasons. You got to sell products because it's efficient. You got to make it easy to repair. You got to have access to it to repair. I mean, it's just like a car dealership. You buy a car, and if you have to replace a widget that's behind the dash, you got to take half the car apart to replace the widget. That doesn't, that's not easy on the mechanic staff, you know. So we always looked at it that way, and that was one of the reasons we made the Broom Bear. Other than the central hydraulic system, everything else on that machine could be bought off the shelf at your local parts store. We made it a contractor's machine. We wanted the contractors to have ease of repairs, because we're contractors. We don't always want to go back to the manufacturer. And, you know, of course, you go back to the manufacturer, and it's, you know, they're only open Monday through Friday. Nobody worries about you on Saturday and Sunday and holidays. So if you need a valve or a hose or something, we made it so you can go to your local parts store and pick it up. That was really the a lot of the main design of that machine. Of course, the valve body and some of the hydraulic components, they weren't off the shelf because they were state-of-the-art parts. But, you know, couldn't do it all. But we hopefully made those parts so they wouldn't break.
Well, there's really something to be said for making a machine from the contractor's point of view, and I think the longevity of it speaks for itself. And that's not to say that the municipal market doesn't really appreciate that kind of simplicity as well.
No, that's, you're 100% right. Municipal market enjoyed our machine. I don't believe there was a demo that we took it out to that wasn't sold to. I think the first two, maybe three machines were solely sold on the prints, some pictures that we brought up, and the reputation of myself and Joe DeSantis. We had towns buy machines, and this machine wasn't even on the road yet. But they knew what we were making and knew where we were going to end it up. And we sold these machines already. And they had our prototypes. I think two were sold in Connecticut and one was sold here in New York. And as soon as we came out into production, the first three machines went to these people. But that's how much confidence that we had in the industry with some of our highway personnel that we dealt with. And it proved out. And let's face it, any machine that goes out on the road, especially a new machine, there's going to be little bugs that have to be siphoned out, and there's going to be little problems. But along with selling the machine, while we were running the company, we guaranteed backup in the technical end of it, in parts shipping. If you called us on a Friday night, if we had to take a part to the airport and put it on a plane, you had it Saturday morning. We wanted to make this a contractor's friendly type situation where you needed something, we were there for you. And that was done many a times where we had to have an emergency shipment and we had to make sure our customers were taken care of. And that was one of the things that we promoted when we were running the company until we sold it.
And as though it's not something for a contractor to step out and build a sweeper, that's some people would think, wow, that's once in a lifetime that anybody could do that. That's not the case in this situation.
Well, the thing of it is that this was a very unique situation. I'm going to say we had a couple of gearheads, we had a couple of investors, and we had two very great engineers, and it was really the right combination. I can remember to this date, we would be there in North Carolina and we'd be designing a part, and Stan Brown would he would draw this part on the concrete floor, and this is what I need to make, you know. And he said, okay, let's go make it. I said, well, what the hell do you expect me to do? Cut the concrete out, bring it to the lathe? I said, you know, meanwhile, then what we did, we gave him sheetrock. We always had sheetrock in the shop. He would lay a piece of sheetrock down, draw the part out, and then we would take that piece back to the guys, and they would make it. We did a lot of reverse engineering. And it was the right group of guys. I'm going to say it is a once-in-a-lifetime. When you get five guys to work together so comfortably and end up with a product. We did this, I'm going to say that this machine was started, designed, developed less than a year. We had this machine on the road. I think that's pretty good for the type of machine that we ended up
with. That's astonishing.
Yeah, I mean, it went very good. And it was the right group of guys. And that's usually what has to happen in any business, I think. If you have the right formula or the right ingredients, it usually works out.
You have long been an advocate for the power sweeping industry as well. Go to the shows, talk to contractors. We're a founding member of the current incarnation of the National Sweepers Association, which is the North American Power Sweeping Association. But back when I got involved with the industry going on 25 years ago now, you were also a leading proponent of, I think it was the National Contract Sweepers Institute then we moved to the Contract Sweepers Institute. There's been a lot of ups and downs and bumps in the road there, but you have long been an advocate for helping other contractors around the country too. Why is that? Why? I mean, you know, you're successful in your own right, and you have no need to do things for others. Why did you decide that that's something you wanted to do?
You mean to help people?
Yeah.
Well, why not? I mean, that's a hard question. It's not a hard question to answer. Number one, let's talk about the industry. When you talk about the guys that belong to these associations, we've been through APWA. We've been part of National Solid Waste way back. We've had many, many different organizations and many different situations. A lot of good times. We work very hard at our business. So when we go to these shows and these exhibits and we learn a lot, we want to enjoy ourselves. And when you go to these meetings, like just the past meeting we had in Memphis, you got to understand one thing. The most important thing is everybody in that room has come from a different state, different part of the country. There's no real competition. You know, so if I tell a guy in California that I'm doing something on my sweeper that saves me money, it's not hurting my industry and my, you know, I'm helping a fellow member that tells me the same thing. So we all get along. He tells me he knows how to fix a water valve easier. I tell him I know how to fix a hydraulic valve easier. I tell him how I market. He tells me how he disciplines his drivers by putting policy in place. So, and we do a lot of that in our industry. When we were down there, we went to a local sweeping company, Aardvark, and Carl was a very, very good host. We saw what he did, and we brought back some ideas. If he comes to my location, he sees what I do. He takes some ideas home, and that's how it, this is a hard industry. It's a very hard industry because our machines are self-destruct. So they deal with dirt, dust, water. That's the worst ingredients for any real base piece of equipment. We need to help each other. I think our government and some of the people in this country should learn from that.
Well, it would be nice if it was that easy, that's for sure.
I know.
You also had another sweeper that you've been involved with on the parking lot side as a single engine. How about that? What got you into that?
We got rid of the Broom Bear. Stan and myself and Bob Hammond decided we're going to build a little air machine, something we want to play with. Well, we're just playing with it in the beginning. All of a sudden, it turned into something we were going to sell. SK Sweepers, also based out of North Carolina, we started it up, and we designed a nice, basic, friendly machine. taking different ingredients from different sweepers and trying to put the best of everything together, and we come up with a damn good machine. And we sold probably about 200 of them, I'm going to guess, somewhere in that area. The company has kind of been put on a shelf for the last year or so, only because we're having difficulties with all the new emission systems coming out and the new chassis, and we just couldn't keep up with it in our small little way, and we just put a hold on it. And basically, we are right now in the process of designing something to come back out with something else. And we don't know which way we're going to go with it yet, so it's really undecided. Okay. But that was a nice little sweeper. I'm still selling some of them. We've refurbished some of them. We are not forgetting about it because it's a needed piece of equipment for our sweeping industry. We can keep the cost of that machine cheap, and I think we've got a couple of people a little upset with us because we kept the machine cheap. And I think that's what you need. I mean, the prices of sweeping parking lots are not going up. It's going down. And the boys are having a hard time keeping up with it, you know, spending $80,000, $90,000 for a sweeper. But what governs that price is the chassis now. The commercial, the sweeper chassis with the new emission systems are really hurting us. So we've kind of like laid back a little bit on that one. But we're coming back. We'll come up with something.
Well, you know, on that topic, a story that we'll have here at World Sweeper that's just kind of waiting there to be developed is I know at the first of the year, Mark Schwartz was given back the first sweeper that Schwartz Industries, that his dad, Bob Schwartz, made back in, I think it was 1972, maybe 73, and which was nice to have that back, you know, so they have that at Victory Sweepers now, which is, of course, Mark's new company. But one of the things that he called me when that happened and said, you know, Ranger, I think we should do a story because I look back at what that sweeper cost. And in those days, we were getting, you know, $75, $85 a sweep, and the machine cost $8,500.
Those are exactly my words.
And now we have sweepers that cost $85,000, and we're getting $25 to $35 a sweep. How do we make this work? And it's in large part, as you say, John, quite appropriately, it's the chassis.
Well, it's getting very difficult, and Mark is another leader in the sweeping industry, a great leader in the sweeping industry. He's built some great machines, and he's done a lot for the industry. And I think he's feeling that. I when I was down at the show, I talked to a few of the other boys from TIBCO and Elgin, and we're all feeling the hurt here. How do we do it? How do you buy a $220,000 broom bear, okay, and go out and charge $120 an hour? You know, if you talk to your accountant about that, he'll tell you you're crazy. You can't do it.
You won't be crazy for long because you won't be in business.
You won't be in business. And this is the problem we're having. So we need to come up with a better mousetrap. This has a lot to do with the regulations we have in this country. One of the ways you get around it is going back to a gas-type machine where some of the regulations don't exist, and you can cheapen the situation. And I think that a lot of people are looking at that right now.
And where do you think the industry is headed? Is that your inclination? Now, you are very much knowledgeable, and I'd say one of the industry leaders in recognizing the environmental side of where the industry is headed. What's your take on that?
Well, I think, you mean as far as
Stormwater runoff and environmental
The stormwater runoff has brought a lot to the table. There again, here we go with regulations again. Wherever there's regulations, there's money. But in this case, with the stormwater runoff, these regulations have to be enforced. If they're not enforced, then there's no money to be made. The stormwater runoff and federal regulations are now coming to the table, and they want a cleaner. They want a cleaner environment. They want the streets clean. They want the catch bases clean. They want your retention basin clean. And this is good. This is good for our business. And I think the street sweeping business, the catch basin business, and the maintenance of retention basins and these overflow ponds are going to be great if you want to keep clean water. But it's going to take a little while. it's just like when they had the big problems with the oil tanks. Nobody paid attention. All of a sudden, they put regulations in place, and everybody's changing their oil tanks. And then it became mandatory. It's still going on. A very good business. The sweeping business is going to get better. The problem I see is with all the education, a lot of people using salt. The public themselves are making a cleaner environment. And unless you lived in the north where they use a lot of sand for snow removal, I've been noticing a lot of shopping centers are cleaning their own act up because, you know, they're doing a better job. But sweeping will always be around. This is a hard call right now. For a while, I said it's going to be great. But right now, people are really keeping a cleaner environment in certain states. So I don't know where you were sweeping 10 times. You might only sweep 5 times. I don't know. That's going to be a hard answer. It's a hard question. But I do see a big future in it because we do have to keep a cleaner environment. I mean, there is a future in it. There's no two ways about it. But it's an expensive future. The price of machinery is going up. I mean, to buy an average vector to clean catch basins, you're going to spend $400,000. I mean, how do you charge that? That's the question. How do you charge that out? What's the formula you use? Do you charge $100 an hour, $500 an hour? I mean, that's the difficult task, because along with that, you can't dewater anymore. You have to take the truck back to the barn and dewater in the barn, because once you pick up the water where we normally dewater back into the basins, they don't allow you to do that. So the regulations are kind of working against us. So regulations will bring more business to the table. It always does. It's just going to be very expensive.
Well, part of that is education, of course, too. You know, right now, if somebody is not in compliance with their stormwater NPDES requirements under the Clean Water Act, and there is enforcement, then it turns out that one of the cheapest ways for you to move toward enforcement is tandem sweeping, where you have a mechanical broom sweeper followed by an air sweeper. And astonishingly, even though the road looks clean behind the broom sweeper, the air sweeper will pick up about 500 pounds per curb mile, and it will all tend to be small micron debris that tends to have the most pollutants in it. And even dual sweeping like that, it turns out to be far less expensive than any of the solutions at the end of the pipe when they have to strip this material out.
Education is very important. Education has become a very big part of running a business. Education is a very big part of community development. Education of people to let them know what it's going to take to keep a cleaner environment. Times today are different than they were in the 80s and 90s. Nobody cared. Cigarette butts all over the place. Who's smoking? Who threw that? People are a little bit more educated now to take care of the environment. And that's what's helping us with the sweeping, too. I mean, with the tandem sweeping and the cleaning and getting back to that situation, yes, the mechanical broom picks the heavy stuff up. The air machine picks up the dust, but there's always some stuff laying there. It's very difficult to make it pure clean. There he is.
That's for sure. It's a moving target, and with the price of machinery going up the way it is, it's very difficult to reach. I happened to have talked to a man in Montreal yesterday that showed me his a machine that he has built, and he put it on a little baby Daihatsu chassis that you can't even drive on the road here, but you can in Canada. That goes back to what you're talking about with regulations. But he's built this, little teeny, very cost-effective sweeper. There's no way to have it in the United States, but he says his customers love it. It's, inexpensive to run and so forth. And as we are doing this interview in 2012, there was a man that had a slide-in sweeper that he has built in New Orleans that he's talking about you putting in your pickup truck, and he's charging $6,500 for it. Yep. Well, I can't speak to the quality or how well it works, but there are going to have to be those kind of innovative solutions like you have come up with the Broom Bear and with SK Sweepers in their own time that need to address that situation for the industry to thrive.
Oh, most definitely. And that's just what I'm talking about, cost. I mean, as everybody gets creative and they squeeze the market, everybody's paying less and they want more. It's very difficult to put these machines on the road. It really, really is. And I don't know where we're going in the future with that, but it's like the guy in New Orleans, he's building a little something. The guy in Canada, he's building a little something. Somebody will take it to the market and go into major production about it, and it'll be good for the industry, you know.
Well, and you can see why they're spurred to it, because of the extraordinary expense for new sweepers today. And, you know, that helps businesses like yours where you refurbish sweepers. I think it's astonishing that AC Mobiles, which are basically 1960s, 1970s sweepers, are still on the road because they had a particular bulletproof solution that they offered.
Oh, most definitely. The AT Mobile was built out of steel. It wasn't built out of tin. It was a masculine machine. It was built very strong. It had some of its own problems, but some of those problems were worked out. And some of those problems we change ourselves now, even though we're still using mobiles. I have Broom Bears and mobiles that I use. The mobiles are very easy to fix. There's no computers in them. They're just strictly all manual situation with hydraulic valves. And we rebuild them every other year. Here at 3D and Tri-State, when we rebuild them, we take it down to chassis and everything's put in, refurbished from the engine transmission. So when I rebuild a machine, it's good for 5 years on the road. And that's what we use here. And I'm going to continue using them as long as I can, because let me tell you, to rebuild a machine for $50,000 is a lot cheaper than buying one at $240,000.
That makes good sense, and that's another reminder to those out there listening that, you know, if you're not working on your own equipment, that's something that, as you grow, is really a direction to travel to.
Right, definitely. The industry is grown tremendously. A lot of good people in it. It's hard. The one most important thing, you got to want to do it. You got to be happy with what you're doing. I like the challenges. I enjoy the industry. I enjoy the people in the industry. And I've learned a lot from some of the younger guys that are coming up, because they come with the younger technology and stuff. And there's a lot going on. I mean, there's GPS that helps us now. There's GPS that does billing and does payroll. I mean, it's really bringing a lot to the table. And it helps us get along with our customers, you know, to prove to them that we're really out there working, you know. You could show the proof of it, and you know, I guess we're bouncing around a little bit. So.
Well, that part's fine. That's a reminder to everyone. Well, you know, one of the things that has contributed to your success is that you haven't rested on any laurels anywhere. You have embraced new technology. You continue to go to the shows. You learn. You teach. You interact, and that's, you know, one of the reasons that you're chosen as a preeminent contractor and preeminent personality in the industry this year, is that, you know, this is not based on what happened in 1975 or 85 or 95 or 2005. It's a lifetime that you've spent, you know, amassing information, keeping up with the times, being innovative, being creative, and maybe most important of all, taking action, taking the bull by the horns and saying, you know, look, I'm not happy with how this is. How can I make it better? And then, like all true entrepreneurs, you do something about it.
Well, remember one thing about all of this, Ranger. I'm nobody without my men. We're partners. I happen to be very fortunate to have some good people here at Hawthorne, New York, and David, my son, who's my older son, he runs the operation up at Connecticut, where Tri-State Industrial is, which is Tri-State Rebuilding Center. He has some good people there, and we really can have all the thoughts unless we got good people around us. We can't produce. My other son runs an operation in Dutchess County, and I'm very fortunate. I have two boys that pay attention and help him build the company, because hopefully shortly I'd like to start taking some time off so that they can take care of it. And I have some good managers here in Westchester too, in Hawthorne, and I'm nobody without my people. We have a partnership. I could have the ideas, and if I don't have the people, they're not going anyplace. So if they don't have me, they're not going anyplace. So we're partners in this thing, and I respect all my people, and that's one thing everybody has to do. Without your people, without the people around you and the technology, you're nobody. You know, I've always believed in that.
Well, and it's taken you a long ways. Is there anything else that you'd like to cover in this? Do you feel like we've done it, or is there any parting words of wisdom here?
Talked about this week in industry. I think we're in for maybe some changes in the next couple of years. Technology may change again, because I think a lot of people, just like you were saying, the guy in Canada, the guy in New Orleans, I think you're going to see some difference of some changes in the next few years. I really do. As far as myself personally, I'm very fortunate and very happy to have all these companies around me. A lot of them work along with the 3D Industrial Company, but you know, we've branched out into different things. Like you said, we started selling rubber mulch for playgrounds, and that's a safety item. My younger son is running a big material yard up in Dutchess County, but he also runs a sweeping operation out of there. I'm just very fortunate to have a lot of good people around me, and as long as I can be healthy, I'd just continue helping people. That's what I like doing.
Well, that's a good sentiment, and I think one that everybody listening to this can remember, and you know, maybe we can encourage them to go take their managers to lunch after they get done listening to the to this audio.
It would help. You know, you have your bad moments, but remember one thing: you got to look around with you, and whatever you have, you didn't do it all yourself. Somebody helped you do it. You know, whether you want to call them your workers, your secretaries, your parts people, drivers, whatever. I mean, you can't drive. I don't care if you have 25 sweepers. You can't drive them all. Somebody has to drive them.
That's right. And if you only have 23 of them operating because your guys aren't coming in for work, then your management style is not going to make you successful.
We try hard. That's all you can do is try hard.
I guess we'll wrap it up then on that point, and I think that's a good one to leave it on, and I wouldn't expect anything different than you wrapping up your interview by talking about the value and ability of those people around you and the importance of creating a good, solid team around you. So we've been speaking with John Dubioso. John is a president of a large number of companies. He's based in the New York, Connecticut area, and for a wide variety of reasons that you've heard articulated and will see on the accompanying articles to this interview. John is the World Sweeper 2012 Award of Excellence in Power Sweeping winner. So congratulations again, John.
Thank you very much.